In this week's episode, Jenny Stone is joined by Amanda Meehan. Amanda has a dual role. She's both a management consultant and a business manager for a GP practice. Amanda gives her top tips for practices that are merging, but also discussed are organisational benefits, challenges in dealing with practice mergers, partners working together, and managing staff through the change. She has a wealth of experience in dealing with practice management and mergers and offers a consultancy service. If you'd like to contact Amanda, her contact details can be found in our show notes. Accountancy on Prescription by RBP, one of the leading firms of medical specialist accountants. We know what you find tough, but don't you worry, as we know our stuff. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Accountancy on Prescription. I'm Jenny Stone, one of the partners at RBP, and I'm delighted to welcome Amanda Meehan to the show. Amanda, do you want to do an introduction?
Sure. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Amanda.
Amanda Meehan. I have been a practice manager for about 24 years and a consultant in primary care for around seven. And I'm now full-time business manager at Chiswick Medical Practice, as well as doing consulting around that.
Brilliant. Thanks, Amanda. And that's how sort of we met dealing with a client. Today, we're going to talk about practice mergers. So Katie and I have done a recent episode on really the financial aspects of a merger. So when we're talking to practices, what they need to be doing when they're thinking about merging and sort of what to look at in terms of the finances. But we thought, Amanda, it would be great to have you on the show today because you've got quite a lot of experience with mergers and more talking about the kind of organizational considerations, you know, from your experience of being in a merger, dealing with it. So we just thought we'd go through and have a chat about that today. So I think really just to start off is from your experience, what do you think some of the benefits of merging practices are?
I have worked in many, many practices over the years, sort of small, medium size. And one of the things that sort of happens is you come in and you kind of pick up where someone else has left off. And I think that mergers give an opportunity to really rethink how you operate, you know, bring things up to date. I mean, when I look back at what practice management was like when I first started, it was completely different to what practice is now. And, you know, we kind of firefight, you know, this is how I describe it. I also do teaching and practice managers and partners, and that's how I describe it. It's like, you know, you're constantly just dealing with things as and when. And I think merging is about really rethinking how you deliver care in a different way, bringing it more up to date, helping to be more efficient, and really doing workforce planning in a sort of proper way.
Yes, yes. I was just recently at a practice where three practices have merged. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're having to rethink kind of the way that they're delivering clinical, because obviously they're much bigger than when it was just their small individual practices. And it's given them opportunities to, you know, to do different things that they wouldn't have been able to do had they just been their sort of single practice. So that's certainly sort of some of the things they were chatting about, is that they were saying to me, you know, the sort of the different things that they're looking at doing. And I think also they were chatting about, you know, that some of the practices did certain services that other practices didn't. So of course it gives them the opportunity to offer that to all of the patients now in the merged practice and earning income from that. So yes, I think there are lots of sort of benefits of merging. And we've been sort of, it's just gone mad, mergers at the moment. And I don't know whether you feel like that, Amanda, but I feel like it just seems to be every other practice going, oh, by the way, we're just thinking about a merger. So I feel like at the moment I've been doing a lot of work around mergers. So it's definitely something that a lot more people are kind of looking at. I mean, there's lots of benefits, but I think there's probably also a lot of challenges as well for merging. Do you want to kind of just maybe just sort of go through some of the challenges that from your experience you see that sort of, you know, when practicing is merge, what they've got to be really thinking about?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll sort of go back to the beginning because I think that it's really, really important to start with the vision. And, you know, you have to kind of understand, or the partners need to understand what it is they're trying to achieve. Getting that planning sort of in place and really trying to kind of understand what the challenges are going to be before you go into it. And I think that that's one of the things that through consulting, where I've been part of mergers, that we try to do so that there are no surprises. And I would say that that's, I mean, you're never going to capture everything, but yes, you need to be prepared for it. You know, I would say number one on the list is underestimating the time and the effort that it takes to get things where you need to get them to, you know, and ensuring that that buy-in from all the partners is there. Because, you know, if you're really going to do it properly, if you're really going to get things in place, tackle probably, you know, long-standing issues, you've got to kind of make sure that you understand what that could look like. You know, there are potential HR issues, there are potential spending issues, you know, the cost of certain things, for example, trying to get, you know, your practice compliant, even down to sort of getting audits done and that kind of thing, it can end up costing money. So I would say number one is underestimating time.
Yes.
Two, cost. And probably the third thing is, how are you going to react if things go wrong? You know, what do we do if things go wrong? And I think, you know, when you've got a new group of partners together, potentially in a merger, really, really safeguarding that relationship as partners is the number one challenge. Because if that goes wrong, everything goes wrong. So you need that constant kind of making sure you have those conversations.
Yes.
What if this happens? Or what if that goes wrong? Or what if we don't agree on something? You know, and I know you've probably covered some of the sort of financial and legal side of it. You know, one of the things is that partnership agreement, but don't underestimate it. Use that opportunity to really think about how you will react, how decisions will be made, so that you can prevent these challenges coming forward. So I would say they're my top three challenges.
Yeah, I definitely, totally. I was kind of really a big grin on my face when you said about the partners. And actually, I think that, you know, with certainly some of the mergers I've been involved with, I think definitely partners all need to be on the same page. You know, you can have practices that are quite big in themselves and they've got challenges where partners, you know, they don't get on or they don't agree. And I always say, you know, when you work as an individual practice, you're used to the personalities in that practice, you know, sort of how you work and how you make decisions. But then when you kind of bring in more partners that you've never really worked with, and you might have worked with in your PCN, but you've not worked on an everyday practice level, there seems to be so many things that need to be ironed out. Even I had a practice say to me, they said, "Oh, Jenny, you know, we're a merge now. Who's the senior partner?" You know, because obviously each practice had their own senior partner, and they were sort of like, "Well, now who's the senior partner?" And I was like, "Yeah, but do you need a senior partner? What does a senior partner actually, you know, not sort of do?" But I agree with you. I think that's really key, because I think the success of practices merging is that all those partners, and I think you're right, have a vision at the beginning. They all need to have a vision, be on the same page, and kind of get, you know, what if we don't agree? How are we going to resolve those issues? Because, you know, we see, unfortunately, partnerships that do break down. Partners don't get on. They fall out over money and workload. When you're on a bigger scale, so yes, I think you're right. Sort of challenges of partners just being able to kind of be on the same page and having those discussions about what if we don't agree.
I need to add something to this because I think I'm surprised I haven't started with this culture. We absolutely underestimate it. There's a saying, culture is strategy for breakfast. And I completely agree with that, you know, having managed in these environments. But, you know, when you put two practices together, that culture becomes so important in how you kind of go forward. Because you can have all these amazing ideas, but actually, you know, coming up against those barriers internally around that is, you know, probably the biggest challenge. So I think culture is number one for me, and really sort of having an exercise where you understand those cultural differences in the beginning. You know, I'm a big one for planning. I'm a big one for kind of doing your research and doing your kind of recce's so that, you know, then you can make a plan, then you can mitigate risk, then you can kind of have those conversations with the partners first is, you know, crucial to that.
Yes. No, thank you, Amanda. I mean, you sort of touched on about sort of unexpected costs. So, I mean, do you have, from sort of your involvement, I mean, do you have an idea of kind of actually if two practices are looking to merge, sort of what that could cost and what some of those examples of costs are?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get sort of three types of mergers. You get the transformational merger where, you know, they've got this vision of, you know, creating this, I mean, like we've done here at Chiswick, you know, creating this sort of modern general practice, you know, where we can do all these amazing things. And that's kind of one part, and that has its own kind of budget, I would say. Then there's the sort of middle ground where it's like, yeah, we just want to come together, want to see some benefits, but actually, you know, we're kind of happy to tick along in the way we're going. And then you kind of have the right, well, let's just operate separately, but be merged.
Yes. Is that what they call a soft merger? Because I have people go, we're just having a soft merger. And I'm like, what is a soft merger? You know, you're either merging or you're not.
100%. But I mean, let's look at the transformational one. And I think that the one thing that is really important is that project management expertise. Somebody needs to be holding everything. And I mean, that's kind of, I would say, the number one thing. Somebody with that change management expertise who can support the process, you know, make sure that we mitigate as much risk as possible by getting the comms right, by, you know, doing the right kind of investigative stuff about how they work, you know, merging the systems, you know, even down to little things like registering patients, you know, you wouldn't believe the differences. So really trying to kind of know and understand it. And I mean, as you know, I'm a consultant, so we've kind of developed this way we work, a roadmap, if you like, of what mergers are. And I really think that anybody merging should do that, no matter whether you're going for the soft merger, you know, middle merger or the final one, because it really helps you to understand what's then. Then you can have a better idea of costs. You know, it's little things like, you know, you want to get yourself compliant. You know, that's the first thing. How can we merge the systems? How can we get compliant? So quite often you see things like, well, okay, do we need a system to hold all our data that everyone can access to separate sites? That's got a cost to it. You know, the project management expertise, you know, having the audits done, for example, you know, you sometimes find that, okay, well, this practice has had a Legionella audit, but that one hasn't. So, you know, that's due. And, you know, each audit's like £500-600.
Yes,
so, you know, you need to make sure they're done. So I think that there is quite, I mean, I would say a minimum budget of around £20,000 is a good one to have for transformational mergers, because I'm not saying it wouldn't be more than that, but that's a good kind of, would say, ballpark figure. And that should cover the first year of merging, I would say.
Yes, yes. Although it might not cover legal fees, because sometimes I've seen some... I was going to say, that, let me just make that point, that I'll probably exclude your legal fees, because I've seen some really big legal fees when they've been dealing with mergers, when doing all the sort of due diligence and then all the new partnership agreements and everything else that's sort of come out.
But, you know, if one thing I will say, if you do get someone in who understands mergers, a consultant who's done it before with experience, they can do the 2P as well. And, you know, it does help to, I think, reduce the cost from that legal perspective as well, because they can be, as you say, extortionate. You know, if you can do some of that legwork internally, it will bring those costs down.
And I think it's even things like the practice I was at recently, they said, oh yeah, we've got to have all the new signs done, because of course they've got a completely new name for the practice. So they're going, oh yeah, we're just going around doing all the signs. So there's probably costs that when you merge that you don't even think about. And I think when we did our finance podcast, we sort of were talking about doing projections. So when I look and try and do projections for practices, we're trying to go, you know, I'm always like, well, there should be some savings being made, but obviously in maybe the year one, year two, there's probably some costs that you're incurring while you're streamlining everything. And actually a practice I was with more recently, one of the partners was looking to retire shortly, and they were sort of saying, you know, we think we're going to have sort of all these costs sort of initially up front first as we're merging. And they were talking about, I might not necessarily see the real benefit of the merger because I'll be gone. And there was sort of a discussion around some significant costs that were going to have to be paid out to bring the other premises up. And they were like, well, I don't see why I should be taking all the hit on that cost when I'm not going to be around to sort of benefit. So there's those, this is the thing, isn't it? When you've got merging, you've got partners in that individual practice that have got their own, you know, maybe not their own agendas, but you know, if they're thinking of retiring shortly, they might be going along with the merger, but they might not be completely invested in it either.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the other things I think that's really, really important is balancing your costs. There should also be, and I think that this is an opportunity to look at your income too. You know, I don't know any practices that completely maximize their income. You know, enhanced services, I'm talking about, you know, utilization of space, all these other things. And I think that, you know, when you merge, that should be sort of first and foremost of what you think about. How can I be more efficient? And I'm talking about workforce planning. I'm talking about maximizing that income, making sure people are doing what they need to be doing, perhaps even retraining people.
Yes.
And I think that this is probably the most challenging, because if you merge, you need to be able to recoup your money. You have to be able to continue to be a viable business, you know, that's number one. So therefore, you know, this is an opportunity to look at your workforce planning, to look at what you're trying to achieve and, you know, work through that retraining, work through that sort of putting people in the right positions, you know, doing the right work. For example, a recent merger I did, there were nurses doing blood tests and ECGs, you know, AMP level nurses. And they were like, we need nurses, you know, we're not able to have enough. So they were always recruiting more. And actually, if you just recruited a couple of HCAs to do that work, you don't need any more nurses.
Yes.
So I say it's an opportunity to really look at that. And, you know, if you do have excess staff in certain areas, how can they be utilised better elsewhere? Can they do perhaps, you know, minor ailmenty stuff? You know, I know we've got pharmacy first, but there's always something that they can support with, or chronic disease management. So, you know, it really is important that you balance all of the costs and all of the other things with that. And again, that goes back to the planning. You know, if you've got somebody in who understands this and can support with the planning, then you can put that plan into place. And hopefully it won't be as costly as it looks on the surface.
Yeah, and I do agree, because I always sort of, when I chat through to practices, I say, well, you know, are there going to be savings that you're going to be making? Because surely you might be two individual sites, and, you know, some mergers might go, you know what, we're closing this site because we're a small site, but normally you're still all the same sites. But I sort of say, I said, but there should still be some savings to be made, you know. Don't just look at it as, no, we're just going to run the same. So I do agree. And whenever I sort of say, you know, well, are there going to be any staff savings? And people look at me like, no. And I was like, well, you know, practice management, you know, you're both individual practices, we're doing the same. Are those roles going to be looked at? You know, so I do agree that there is it's an opportunity to kind of look at all of the workforce. And just from your experience, I can imagine merging must be quite challenging with staff, because I think people don't like change, do they? So partners have kind of made this decision, yes, we're going to merge. They might all have the same vision. They can see the benefit. They can see, you know, they're going to really modernize the practice. But staff, I think, can sometimes be quite resistant or may not want to change, and they're worried about the sort of the merger and, you know, maybe worried about their job. I mean, what kind of advice would you give people if they're sort of trying to deal with staff during a merger, and how best to kind of keep them informed?
Yeah, I mean, I would say first year or even first year and a half, there's always staffing issues. Change is not easy for anybody, but my advice to everybody who is going through this is do it all in one hit. Be open and transparent from the beginning what it is that you are aiming to do. What is it you're trying to achieve? Unfortunately, there's always going to be occasions where there are people who don't want to work in a larger organisation. They don't want to perhaps do different tasks that, you know, they haven't been doing. And there's always going to be these challenges and issues. And, you know, you can mitigate that as much as possible through good communication. You know, I mean, something I do is have a structure of weekly meetings. I always, with every member of staff, standard agenda weekly meetings, updates, newsletters, one-to-ones, get the appraisals in within the first 6 months so that you can start to have these conversations, start to reassure staff and make sure they understand where they can go if they need support and they need help. You know, training plans, make sure that if you're asking perhaps a receptionist who's only ever dealt with patients over the desk, never answered the phones or never looked at a task box or anything like that, that you give them the tools that they can do it, to the training, the support, the mentoring that they need. And it is, you know, incredibly time consuming. And, you know, why in the beginning, this is so important in the planning process, that you communicate with staff at every stage and you make that plan. Don't do it ad hoc, because there will be problems. Be aware that this may cause problems. You know, there may be HR issues. You may see grievances and potentially disciplinaries and potentially other issues, and because you're redefining those boundaries and you're setting the rules and setting the scene for what the new organization is going to be. And that can be stressful for everybody. So as much as you can do to mitigate that, as much as you can do to support the staff and help them to kind of, you know, understand
what the organization.
Yeah, the new culture is going to be.
Yes, yes, because that's the thing, isn't it? Like you say, I think it's a really valid point, the sort of the culture. You know, you've got two practices or three practices or four practices merging, and they're all going to have different cultures, and they're going to be used to doing things very differently. Yeah. And I can imagine that must be a real challenge with staff. And like you say, with anything, it's communication, isn't it? And transparency, and actually reassuring staff that if they're going to have new roles, that there is going to be training and there is going to be support. Yeah.
One thing I will say, and this is tip number one for me with communications, sit down with the whole partnership to write them, because the sort of leadership of the organization has to be on board. There's a lot of change management theory out there, and I think there are a variety of different opinions on this, but I think the minimum is that it's 80% of the leadership. I would say in general practice, it's more than that.
Yes.
And I think that's because of the partnership set up, the way that the organization, the culture of general practices. And I think it's important for all the partners to be on board. And therefore, communication planning must be done as a group, and that, you know, constant check-in. You know, it's very easy for managers to go off on their own and do their own thing. And I think that this can often cause barriers and splits in the leadership team. And it's really important everyone's aligned. So my advice is do the plan together for how you're going to manage staff, do the plan together for your communications, and agree together what those statements are, you know, at what point, because I think that will really help mitigate a lot of problems.
Yes. And actually, when practices are merging, it's something that they've not done. You know, they've not kind of gone, oh yeah, we did this merger, now we're merging again. You know, everybody that sort of merges is kind of new to it. And kind of, I feel like they're sort of just trying to find their way. And quite often, you know, practices might not bring in a consultant or somebody of your experience to come and help. And quite often it's the practice managers that are trying to work together with the other practice manager to try and kind of bring it all together. So they don't have the experience. So is there any more tips that you would kind of give from your experience with kind of merging? And
sure. I mean, I think number one is the communication, you know, doing it together, having that kind of joint statement approach. Number two is, look up change management theory. There's Cotter's eight steps, John Cotter's eight steps. There is some really useful information in there about the stages of change. And I highly recommend looking at it, because it will really help you to understand the process and what you need to do at the different stages. My third tip is really think about, from a kind of perspective of how you look to your staff. So really think about it as a kind of, I can't think of the word now, but, you know, like we do in the media, everybody sees what the management and leadership does. So make sure that you've got a presence in the right places, they're saying the right thing, they're communicating the same messages, and that message is really clear to everybody. I think that's hugely important. You know, you can't have a team meeting through this process without having somebody from that management leadership team there saying the same thing as if they would speak to the practice manager in the corridor or someone else. I really think that alignment is crucial. And alongside that alignment, think about how you can align to national strategy with your merger. You know, there's been a lot of kind of papers. There's the Future General Practice, which was a paper written for the House of Commons. It's got lots of good information in there. There is the Fuller Report. There is the New Modern General Practice Model.
Yes.
think about how you can align to these national strategies. It really, really helps with your patient communications, your staff communications. It helps you to justify what it is that you're trying to do. And I genuinely think that that is one of my top tips that will really help it to be successful. Yeah. Because the stuff is there, your terminology is there, your reasoning is there, which really helps you to justify things.
Yes, yes. No, thank you, Amanda. That's been really useful and a real sort of insight into kind of the organisational side, because I only ever look at mergers from the financial, you know, you sort of look at it from the finances, and I'm busy kind of going, well, okay, what's this projection going to look like? And of course, I don't ever have to worry about, you know, the staff issues, and I'll be going, are there any redundancies that you're making? And of course, I'm not even thinking about, you know, there's actually a whole, you know, all the organisational stuff and the impact all of that has on staff. Just one final thing, can I ask you, because I have had some mergers where they've been able to tap into some support money from the ICB, but it seems to kind of very much vary. Is there money available to help practices with some of these costs that we've talked about?
I think that, like you say, it varies. There used to be pots of money for what they call resilience.
Yes.
And usually I was brought in through that stream of funding, but it does vary. There is a national programme for resilience now, which is the General Practice Improvement Programme, GPIP.
Yeah.
And that's very much aligned to implementing the modern general practice model, you know, across practices. And it would be potentially an option to utilise that to try to get your systems aligned and working in a good way alongside your merger. So that is definitely an opportunity to get some support. But I would always speak to your ICB, speak to them, get some advice, and they'll tell you whether or not they can support you in that way.
Yes, no, definitely. Because I do know that some practices have had support, whether it's towards legal fees of merging. And especially because, you know, if the ICB are on board with the merger and they want the merger to happen, then they're more likely to be supportive from a finance point of view as well. Amanda, thank you so much. It's been really lovely to finally get you here and get you on the show and just listen to some of your experiences. And I hope everybody that's been listening has found that useful. If you have, please do share our podcast with your colleagues and please rate and subscribe. Thank you, Amanda. See you
soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to RBP's Accountancy on Prescription podcast. For any updates, please visit www.rbp.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at RBPCA. The contents of this podcast is for general guidance and informational purposes only and does not constitute any form of advice. The information provided by RBP is of a general nature. Appropriate and tailored advice or independent research should be obtained before making any decisions. RBP does not accept any liability for any loss or damage which is incurred from you acting or not acting as a result of listening to Accountancy on Prescription.